Welcome to another Horse and Round podcast. I'm Andy Lindahl from the Bronco Radio Network, joined as always by DenverBroncos.com's own Andrew Mason. Andrew, how are you?
Doing all right. A little bit of cough, a little bit of a sore throat, but hanging in there.
Well, that's this time of year, isn't it? That's just this time of year. Hey, so the Broncos schedule comes out today. I got to give you props before we break down what looks to me to be a very tough first schedule for any new head coach, but you had called the Charger home game. You thought that the Raiders, with their situation, wouldn't be featured. You called not only the Chargers as the opponent, but the late Monday night game. You could have been more right about any of it. Just your reaction to getting the game that you thought would happen.
Well, it just seemed like a logical choice for week one. I mean, to get the Broncos on there. And the Monday night games, they're usually good but not great matchups. I think the other one that's going to precede Broncos Chargers is Saints at the Minnesota Vikings, and it gives the league a chance to get the Chargers on and kind of spotlight them in, you know, representing their new city of Los Angeles, maybe generate some buzz. But the thing is, if that game was going to happen in primetime in week one, it was going to be in Denver. It was not going to be in LA. In fact, the Chargers do not have a primetime game at home this year. It's everything at StubHub is on Sunday afternoon in a regular time on a CBS or Fox. So they can spotlight the Chargers. They can spotlight them being in a larger market, but they don't have to show a 30,000-seat stadium on national television. And I think for ESPN, I mean, they've got two Broncos games this year in their Monday night package. The Broncos got five primetime games. That's a healthy amount, certainly. It's pushing up against the maximum that you can have. But certainly the fact that instead of, say, three Sunday night games, it's two Monday night, two Sunday night shows, that maybe they just take a little bit of a step back. But they're still a draw, and it's a good game for ESPN to have, and I think it'll be good for the Broncos, of course. That being said, last time they played in the late window on Monday night, in week one, they lost 23-20 to Oakland back in 2011, John Fox's first game. And that was also, Andy, the only time that a new Broncos coach that was coaching week one of a season lost his opener.
Well, that's foreboding. That's not exactly the kind of facts that I wanted you throwing out at me right now. I did want to ask you, because we talked about it on the show today. You can catch us on Denver Sports 760 from 10 to 1. Andrew's on at least once a week with us, so just kind of check in on the show. We'll tell you what day, usually a Thursday or a Friday. But you had brought up that if the Broncos got that maximum number of games, you thought it would prove that Von Miller and the defense and guys like that, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, were still kind of guys that helped get, you know, eyeballs on the television. Is the five primetime games, did that confirm your thought?
I would say so. I mean, you don't have the quarterback, obviously, that's got national renown, but Von Miller is still a player that you can build ad campaigns around. That is still a player with a lot of buzz and a lot of national juice. So that certainly helps them. I think not so much maybe Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, but definitely Von Miller. That keeps the Broncos relevant. And it's also a team that has a big fan base, a widespread fan base, draws generally good ratings. So all those things, I think, will keep the Broncos in the spotlight unless they completely fall off the cliff. But I doubt they will. I mean, it's a demanding schedule. There's no doubt. We're going to get more into that. But there's still a lot of talent on this team. There's a lot of blue chip guys like Von Miller, like Demaryius Thomas, like Chris Harris Jr. and Aqib Talib, etc. With what they have, I think there's a pretty high floor to this team, and I think there's a chance that they can maybe surprise some people. And the other thing with the schedule, don't forget it. Everyone's making a big deal about the Broncos having the toughest schedule based on last year's win percentage. That's well and good, but a lot of those same opponents are on the Chargers, Chiefs, and Raiders schedules. It's going to be demanding for all of those teams, and I could see the winner of the AFC West coming in at 10-6, maybe even 9-7.
Yeah, I don't know that I can offer you a lot of hearty disagreement there, because the Raiders, as a matter of fact, play the exact same schedule the Broncos do as far as who they travel to and who travels to them in that same schedule with the AFC East and the NFC East and so on and so forth. What is interesting for me, Andrew, let's just dive into why it's so hard. We can get into specific opponents. And again, you know what? I'm not a guy that's going to go through the schedule and tell you what the record's going to be. We don't even know who the Broncos' starting left tackle is right now. So I'm certainly not going to give you a prediction as to what the record's going to be when we don't even really know yet who the personnel is going to be on the team. But the reason why I think this one is so tough is because you play three of your first four at home, then you get a bye, then you get another game at home, then there's that brutal three-game road stretch where you not only go to San Diego, then you go to the Chiefs, then you go to Philadelphia. It's like you just work your way farther east, then you get a couple games at home, then you go back out on the road, first to Oakland, then across to the other side of the country, the other coast, and to Miami. And then you've got the late in the year, but that mid-December Thursday night game at the Colts is the one that really stings me. When you think about the playoff positioning that that could be for, whether, you know, both teams are battling for a wild card or you could have both teams battling for their division and trying to get to that third spot, if not the second spot, and get a bye, whatever it could be. I just feel like with all the trips mixed in, I just feel like you and I lived with a lot of travel last year in November and December, and it looks like the Broncos are set up with that again with a lot of long trips. I just wonder how that wears on team.
And the thing with Indianapolis, there are only two teams that have to go play a Thursday night game and travel two time zones. Broncos in that game. Now Indianapolis is on the western edge of the eastern time zone, but still you've got a 2-hour time shift in Kansas City when it goes to Oakland for a Thursday night game. So that doesn't help you at all. The three road games in succession. You know, I remember there was a time when the NFL tried to avoid those kinds of road swings. And now they happen pretty commonly. There's eight teams, Andy, including the Patriots, that have to play three consecutive games on the road this year. That's not something that appears to be a priority anymore. It resembles some of the very unbalanced schedules you'd see back in the 60s and 70s with some teams, like the Jets. They would play few, if any, home games until mid-October because the Mets were using Shea Stadium. So they would always have these backloaded home schedules, and they'd have these long road swings early in the season. For decades, the NFL tried to keep as many road swings as possible to two games. It doesn't appear that matters anymore. And the other thing, go back to 2014. Remember that three-game road swing? The Broncos went 1-2. That was a 12-4 team. That was a championship contending team. The 2010 team went 0-3 on a three-game one road swing. The last one before that, 1997, the Broncos first world championship team went 1-2 in a three-game road swing. So what that tells you is even outstanding teams have trouble with a three-game road swing, and we don't yet know what this Broncos team is going to be. We don't know if it's going to be elite or not. I mean, like, you know, you just mentioned, we don't even know, you know, who the left tackle is going to be. We're going to find out over the summer whether it's Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch's quarterback. There's a lot of questions, and they're going to have to be answered fast, because if this team doesn't get out to a good start in those first five games with four at home, then it could get real dicey real fast in midseason.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that fast start in a second and why it'll be so important. Explain that further. But, you know, Andrew, I thought you had a great idea. Another thing I don't like about this schedule, when you talk about that three-game trip or even the trip when you go Oakland and then to Miami, what I don't like is you had brought up the concept that maybe the Broncos, if they go east for a couple of games, they stay east. Well, that's impossible because, again, none of these trips, you're going from West Coast to East Coast by the time it's done. You're not going to stay in Kansas City and then go on to Philadelphia, for example, even though maybe you think about it, because the other thing I don't like about that little stretch is you get a Monday night game in Kansas City, and then you go to – not only do you have to play Monday night and then travel again the next Sunday, but you get a Monday night game and get what – isn't that an early slot? I don't have the times in front of me, but isn't that an early slot in Philadelphia then the following week?
It's 1 p.m. Eastern. Now, it'll help a little bit that is the fallback weekend. So it would. So it, instead of being the equivalent of an 11 a.m. start, it would be Mountain Time. It would be noon, basically. because you do get that extra hour on Sunday morning. But still, that's one of the longest trips of the season, and it comes right after the Broncos get back to Kansas City. They'll arrive home from Kansas City sometime in the wee small hours of Tuesday morning, and then they'll turn around a few days later, and they're going to fly to Philadelphia for one of their longest road trips of the year. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that in terms of mileage, only Miami is going to be longer than that trip.
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you, Andrew, it's brutal. It's one of those where you better buck up and you get going. And let's get back to the point. The reason why, not only do you have to figure out your quarterback as soon as possible, but, and I think this plays for those, you know, look, I cannot wait to see what Paxton Lynch brings to the table in the competition. But to be honest with you, when I look at how that first five games, six games with the bye week breaks out, and we talked about four of the actual first five are at home. There's a bye week after the first, four? And then you play another home game. Andrew, that to me speaks to maybe giving a nod to Trevor Siemian, just as a guy that's been in the NFL a little bit longer and maybe picks up some of the Mike McCoy stuff a little bit quicker. Who knows? But you've got to come out with this offense, and it's got to be humming pretty much week one. You can't be stumbling too much. You maybe get your warm-up game with the Chargers, but then with the Cowboys coming to town, you're going to have to be on your A game with them. Of course, they were a powerhouse in the NFC last year, and you just don't have time to be searching around finding your offense, Andrew. You've got to win these home games.
You do, because, I mean, Buffalo in week three, I mean, Buffalo was, you know, struggling last year, but that's no picnic, and that's going to be a very significant test for this run defense, which has been rebuilt up front. And if Buffalo can run the ball the way it did last year, they would be capable of gashing the Broncos on the ground, certainly. So you've got to be on your P's and Q's there. I mean, the thing that people are going to have to look at with this schedule, and also kind of, you know, in terms of looking at with their expectations for this team, because there's so much that's unknown, I cannot sit here right now and look at very many games where I say, okay, yeah, the Broncos really should win that one no matter what. Maybe the Jets at home in week 14, because the Jets look like they're in tumult right now. But aside from that, I don't look at any of these games and say, yeah, that's a sure win. Not even the Chargers in week one, despite their struggles the last 2 years, because you have Phillip Rivers, and he's an X factor in any game he plays. And he's going to be running that offense for the first time, and there's going to be an element of surprise to the LA Chargers in week one. So it's a daunting schedule. We knew that on paper, but you know, going before, but now that we've seen the order of it, we've seen the early start, and if they can defend the home field, they'll be in good shape. But we see that. But then you get to midseason, that stretch, and then if they have four road trips out of 5 weeks from Thanksgiving weekend to Christmas Eve, and it reminds me a little bit of last year when the Broncos had three of four on the road in December, and that's when things fell apart. They'd better be, if they are trying to make a playoff push, they'd better have a nice record going into Thanksgiving weekend, because at Oakland, at Miami, Jets at home, at Colts, at Redskins, all of those road games are against teams that were at least 500 last year. It's a pretty tough stretch there at the end.
Yeah, you know what? I got to be honest with you. You talk about when you've got to have that good schedule. I almost wanted to laugh out loud, because there's not really a point where you can afford to be hitting a bad lull. Like you said, you and I both know the travel. And again, I understand for blue-collar workers, you don't want to hear this stuff. But you and I are here to tell people how the NFL really is at times. And that travel, it wears guys down. You and I lived it when you went from Oakland at a night game. Then you went out and you played New Orleans, and we got a bye for a couple weeks. But then to know that you had Jacksonville, then to Tennessee, then you were home against the Patriots, and it's back out to Kansas City. That stuff wears on a team, and we saw it. That team was mentally tired by the end of the year. The late bye, you thought it would have helped. I don't know that it did too much. But I'll tell you what, to me, there's no worse combo than the early bye and that late Thursday game. And I hate to go back to it, but that to me, now, if you can win that Thursday game against Indy and you have the good record that you're talking about, that becomes a mid-December bye almost with the weekend. That's how the players will tell you they approach it. But like you said, it is no picnic to be playing on a Thursday night. It stinks when you're the team traveling on a Thursday night, and to go two time zones, as you pointed out. these are the little things that make this one so brutal. And I know you've already touched on the Indy matchup, Andrew, but I just thought that the NFL, you talk about the scheduling quirks, I thought the NFL was trying not to put too many overly impactful games on Thursday nights. I know that people want to watch, look, people watch football no matter who it is. And to me, I just think it's not fair. I don't know what else. And look, life isn't fair, but I just don't know why the NFL did such a disservice to the Broncos, which I think they did by making them go to Indy so late in the year on a Thursday night.
And on top of all that, Indianapolis, we know how much trouble the Broncos have had in Indianapolis over the years. And it has been a tough matchup. They have not won in Indianapolis since late in the 2003 season. And whether it's been Peyton Manning at quarterback or Andrew Luck at quarterback, the Colts have caused the Broncos major problems there. So that was already going to be a tough matchup. Heck, you can go back to the 80s and 90s, and the Colts would cause problems in Indianapolis. I think you remember the 1988 Halloween Massacre.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring it up.
I just remember that I think it was the late Frank Gifford and Al Michaels and Dan Dierdorf. I think they all came on the air with masks that were – like, I think Frank was holding a Dierdorf mask and Al was holding a Gifford mask. You know, they're kind of, you know, they were doing something goofy. And then the game happened and it got out of hand. One of quite a few games that year where things got out of hand, especially on defense. But, Indianapolis has just been a place where the Broncos have had a lot of trouble. And then you put the Thursday night game on top of it. And, you know, if you can manage to get a win, my goodness. I'll say this, if the Broncos are in playoff contention, and they managed to get a win in that game, boy, they're going to be soaring in terms of their morale going into those last two games. Absolutely soaring. So I'll just take the positive view of it. It's an opportunity. And that's the kind of game that if you get it, it can propel you into the playoffs and beyond. So there's that opportunity there. They just have to take it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. And I will say, looking at positives, you get lucky because you go to Buffalo in September and Miami in December. Had you switched those two destinations,
oh boy,
yeah, that would not, you'd have the potential for really bad extremes on either side. So at least that works out, and maybe that, you know, the December trip to Miami could be a game where at least physically you get your mind right. You know, I can remember in 2015 the Broncos had that early December trip to San Diego. The guys talked about how much they were excited just to play the game and be in some nice weather and not deal with the cold. I guess overall, really, it's good news. You shouldn't face too many cold weather games in December overall, with the Indy game being indoors. You know, you get a couple games here. But we'll see, Andrew. We will see. Man, it just makes everything more intriguing as far as what you do on the draft and in free agency. Let me ask you this, and we didn't know what the schedule was now. John Elway has seemed confident in his plan. I don't expect him to change that opinion moving forward, but do you think, looking and knowing what your schedule is now, does it change anything as far as draft and free agent prep before it all wraps up? Because let's be honest about it. To me, with what we just laid out for having to get off to a hot start, you've got to know your offensive line. You can't be hoping. You got to know what your offensive line situation is now in order to get those wins at home early on.
Well, I'm just thinking of week one. I'm thinking of Joey Bosa across the line of scrimmage. And you better have your line ready to go, because the Chargers are going to be able to rush the passer. And they're going to have a pretty good knowledge of what the Mike McCoy offense is because of his time being a head coach there. So, you know, obviously you've made changes on the coaching staff, but the players are going to have an idea, you know, what could be dialed up. Of course, that being said, Mike McCoy is going to know the strengths and weaknesses of almost every guy on that Chargers defense because he was the head coach there. So it can go both ways. But if you're not set up front against the Chargers, you're going to have problems because they can generate a pass rush from the edge and from the interior. They work well off each other. So that is a dicey game. You better have your offensive line on point right away. And then Dallas comes in. And Dallas, very similar to what I mentioned about Buffalo in week three, they can run the ball down your throat. So for the run defense, bring in Domantas Pecco, Zach Kerr. Those guys had better be ready to step up and deliver the kind of gap clogging play that frees up the linebackers to make plays and ensures that the Broncos linemen aren't pushed back at the line of scrimmage like we saw so often against the run last year. So, and even the Chargers bring a challenge in terms of the run defense because of Melvin Ingram, what he can do, especially in short yardage and near the goal line. So all these questions the Broncos have tried to answer over the last few weeks and are still going to be answering going into the draft and beyond because they're not done with everything. They're going to have the answers really fast or they're going to be in trouble in the first few games.
In your opinion, because the reports keep coming out, our insider Mike Kliss claimed he threw out a second-round pick for Joe Thomas earlier in the week. I don't know where maybe he got that price tag from. If you had to be a bet man right now, is Joe Thomas part of this equation when we talk about that offensive line by the time you and I are recording our next podcast post-draft? Or do you think that that's just still something that we're hoping for and it's not as close to reality as many want?
I think it's still a hope just simply because, and we talked about this on the air, if word gets out, and if the Browns do put Joe Thomas on the market, I think there's going to be a lot of suitors, and I think that price may go up and it may end up being beyond what some teams might be willing to pay, and then other teams, and you get more teams involved, you kind of get some variables going in, so that's the thing. Now, if Cleveland just decides to kind of keep the negotiations quiet, and maybe they only negotiate with one or two teams, then maybe that price tag is reasonable. Maybe it's in that second round range. We'll see. But I think if they really start pushing, I think someone might give him a first round pick. That may lead to him going to a team that has more draft capital.
So you don't think the Broncos would be willing to give up 20 for him? Because at this point, look, I don't know that I love the thought of Joe Thomas for the 20th pick just because you want to believe your 20th pick is going to be a decade-long player. Well, what we've laid out with this schedule, all of a sudden, if you give up 20 for Joe Thomas, in my mind, at least you know you got a guy that's going to step on the field and be ready to go for you, barring injury, when that first game on September 11th rolls around. And I don't know that you're going to 100% be able to say that, especially if you're drafting an offensive lineman with that 20th pick.
Well, that's very true. But at the same time, John Elway was the guy who kind of walked away from getting Joe Thomas back a year and a half ago when the price got too steep and he was willing to just go ahead and ride with Ryan Harris and Tyler Palumbus replacing Ryan Clady at left tackle and they got by. So, I think he's certainly shown he's willing to roll the dice with, other options, but we'll see. Certainly if he's on the market, it'd be tough to turn down. But the other thing is with Joe Thomas, let's say he's, if he's available, let's say you're talking about four, maybe 5 years if you're lucky, and get him, and you have to make sure you get him re-signed, obviously. But he's kind of at the Gary Zimmerman point, and Gary Zimmerman, when the Broncos brought him back in '93, so you have to decide is it worth if the price gets to be a first round pick, is it worth it for a guy who's only potentially a 4 year guy and. Compared to the fact with a first-round pick, you can find a 10-year player. That's something they're going to have to, that they may have to decide in the next few days.
Well, they're going to have to figure that out. I want to leave you on this because you again called it. You're pretty good at this schedule predicting stuff, but you called it the Chiefs against the Patriots. I wondered if the NFL wouldn't opt again for that Super Bowl rematch like they showed us last year with the Panthers and the Falcons. You assured me in a private conversation earlier in the week, you thought no way that would happen. The Panthers did enough griping about what they had to do. Matter of fact, Kawhi Short was still griping about it when he met the media this week to talk about his contract and what could have been different if they didn't lose to Denver or face Denver in the first week, so on and so forth. So we get the Patriots-Chiefs. Do you like that matchup? Do you think it's intriguing? I mean, look, it's the first game of the year we're all going to watch anyway. But does it help? How much does it help the Broncos to have the Chiefs start with the Patriots up first?
Potentially a tremendous help for the Broncos if the Chiefs can go out there and struggle and come back from New England 0-1. Of course, if they go out there and pull off the upset, then boy, you start getting nervous. But it's a good matchup as far they're both the Patriots defending champions. Chiefs have become a perennial playoff contender with Andy Reid, and we all go back to the playoff game in January 2016, where kind of resembled what happened to Andy Reid's Eagles in the Super Bowl against the Patriots back in Jacksonville a dozen years ago, when it just seemed like they were way too casual with the management of the game and the clock. Something we also saw this year against Pittsburgh, I thought, really took up too much time and didn't when they took up too much time and they didn't give themselves a second chance when they didn't get a 2-point conversion against the Patriots. They needed two scores. They just kind of they drove downfield and they got within one score, but they couldn't do. But they didn't leave themselves a chance to get more. So certainly they can play with it. They can play with the Patriots, but at some point Andy Reid's going to have to figure out this clock management thing.
All right, my friend. Well, that'll do it for our segment here. Next week, we will talk NFL draft as we are going to be next Thursday. It's the first round, Friday, of course, second, third round. Wrap it all up on Saturday. So not only will you hear Andrew on DenverBroncos.com, but I'm sure we'll hear his voice plenty on Denver Sports 760 as well and 850 KOA as we bring you draft coverage there all weekend long. Right now, though, that wraps it up here for the Horse Around Podcast. More ahead.